Welcome to the Eldritch Estate, an establishment dedicated to the bizarre, the dark, and all that is otherworldly. We invite our guests to come and stay a while, to enjoy the haunted hallways, the shrieks of terror and delight, to forget time in our enchantingly disturbing abode. Whether it's for an overnighter or a week-long stay, our hostesses will see to it that you are shocked, horrified, and left morbidly curious about the goings-on here at the estate. Will you take a trip with us? We can't wait for you to see what's in store.
Hello, and welcome back to the Eldritch Estate. I'm Dusty.
And I'm Katie.
And it's time for a new episode, and we're, like, back on schedule. And we're still trying to figure out the best way to do a new recording setup. So this is actually back to an older recording setup. But I want to apologize for Katie's audio being so quiet in the last one. I'm not trying to dominate the conversation, I swear.
Welcome to my entire life, guys. I could tell a joke and nobody would laugh, and then Dusty would say literally the same fucking thing, and then everyone would laugh, and I'm like, God damn it.
I would just say it slightly louder, because, like, nobody heard her, and then I would say it, I'd be like, oh, that was funny, and I'd repeat it, and then everyone would laugh, and be like, oh, Dusty, you're so funny. I was like, no, actually, it was Katie, you guys, and they were like, it's not Katie, Katie never talks.
She's not funny, she doesn't even say stuff.
Yeah, so, there was some sort of issue where, like, I think we had two microphones, and we thought both microphones were recording, but only one was recording, and so you were actually hearing my audio through my mic, and we were hearing Katie's audio also through my mic, which Katie was much further away from, which is why she was so quiet.
I just turned into an ethereal ghost, it's fine.
Yeah, every time I tried to edit her parts to be louder, they got super echoey and staticky, and I felt like I was in the Power Rangers. And, like, the silver part in the middle that lights up with the hologram and, like, tells you about the mission. Katie was, like, telling me about the mission and shit, you know? Okay. So getting into our new episode, I told you that it would be lighter material this time, and
it is.
It's time for aliens, motherfuckers!
It's time!
Today's episode will be about the infamous Little Green Men of Kelly, Kentucky.
We're taking it to Turkey.
So, a little bit of background. Kelly is a very small, unincorporated area near Hopkinsville, Kentucky.
Because that's where all the alien encounters happen. They're like, this one's kind of off the grid.
Yeah. I mean, you don't want to be seen. You're trying to lay low. You're trying to go where there's not that many people. So if they do try and report it, people won't believe them.
You get this one guy who's like, I was probed!
Exactly. And they'll be like, nah, that's just Tim. He says that all the time.
He just had a little too much to drink.
He actually likes the probing. I don't know what it is, but he seems to enjoy it.
Makes him happy.
So it is part of Christian County, and it's not included in a census count, so I don't actually have a population estimate for you.
You know, I didn't know there was places in the United States that weren't part of the census.
Yeah, it's kind of weird, because they're, like, aggressive as fuck.
I was gonna say, how do I sign up to not be part of the census? Because they are so fucked. Like, they'll just fucking knock on your door if you don't answer your mail.
There was one time they kept missing us, and they kept leaving notices on our door, and I don't know if it was, like, they didn't have our phone number or whatever, but then they showed up and they were like, we need you to, like, report for the census. And I was like, okay, shit. And they were like, well, we've tried contacting you 3 times. And I was like, I was busy.
I'm pretty sure census workers make bank. Like, it's seasonal, but you make good fucking money.
Do you think they have a quota or, like,
probably
commission or something like that?
More than likely. Like, you gotta sign up. You don't sign them up. They already live there.
Yeah, right.
You gotta count so many people.
You gotta count them bodies.
Count them. Okay, you know what would be cool, though? A pet census.
I was just thinking that, because when they came, they were like, how many people live in this apartment? And I was like, 2, because I was counting the dog. He's a person.
This is my son.
He lives here. He doesn't pay rent, but yeah, it's my child.
I can't claim him on my taxes, however, this motherfucker's expensive.
Exactly. He hangs out all day. He watches TV. He sits on the couch. He eats. It counts. So Hopkinsville, which as I mentioned is nearby Kelly, does have a population count, and their population is about 30,000. The area is mostly rural farmland, sprawling hills, and empty fields, so basically ain't shit out there.
Some cows.
Some cows. Some fields.
Crops.
Crops.
Places where you can make crop circles.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It was August 21st, 1955. At around 11 p.m., nearly a dozen people from the Sutton family farmhouse poured into the Hopkinsville police station, terrified and out of breath. The Sutton family, or rather, extended family, lived in an unpainted three-room house in this rural part of Kentucky. The farmhouse did not have running water, telephone, radio, TV, or books.
Or paint.
Or paint. Or, like, fucking anything. Like, I'm surprised it had a goddamn floor. It wasn't just bare dirt.
Bored.
And between them, there were 8 adults and 3 children.
You know, I think it would actually probably be better for you if you, like, had a dirt floor. They say that your bare feet touching the ground is supposed to be, like, an antidepressant. Earthing.
Maybe if we didn't live in Arizona. Because, like, okay, we've had a couple of windy days out here in our part of Arizona.
Oh, dude, it would be so disgusting.
And there is an entire unincorporated field behind my house.
I love this story.
Full of tumbleweeds. Full. Chalk fucking full, you guys, of tumbleweeds. And if you're not familiar with tumbleweeds, they are these gigantic, sort of circular, spiky plants.
They start out green.
They start out green with spikes all the fuck over them. No flowers. No cool leaves, it's just spikes. And then they dry up and die, and they let go of their root in the ground.
From the ground.
And then they tumble in the wind. Like, literally, like, rolling, 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 like...
Sometimes if you hit them, like, during a monsoon storm, they'll explode on the front of your car. And it will fuck up your car. Like,
it will, they'll scratch them. Yeah. So... they roll, and that's how they reseed, because they drop spikes as they roll, and then those spikes get planted into the earth and become new tumbleweeds. So, like, this is a, you know, it's built in to their biological code to do this.
Cyclical.
So, because there's this big fucking field behind our house, and because it was so fucking windy, there was an army, I mean an absolute fucking horde of tumbleweeds that overtook my backyard. These fuckers were, like, climbing the fence, jumping over the fence, piling up. They were 7 feet tall.
It looked like Dusty's backyard was a Tupperware full of tumbleweeds.
It was a goddamn apocalypse. They filled up the whole yard. My dogs couldn't go outside and potty. Like, so...
Did this happen to your neighbors, too?
Yes. I think our house somehow got hit worse than everyone else's, but our... house next door to us, nobody is living in right now, so those tumbleweeds are still in that yard.
And the HOA has the audacity to bitch at you.
Yeah. Yeah. So, the rule is, if we can throw the tumbleweeds back over the fence into, like, the communal area, then the HOA will come by and take them. But there were so many in our yard that we weren't able to get them all over, and,
well, I'm like, you can't fucking pick them up without getting impaled.
And they just fucking disintegrate after a certain point. Like, you can try to pick them up. It was like having a fucking claw machine. Like, you'd get 2 shovels or, like, a shovel and a rake, and you'd, like, grab a whole bunch of them, and you'd try to lift them over the fence, and by the time you got to the fence, you only had, like, a quarter of what you had picked up.
Mm-hmm.
So...
I love that Arizona's like, let's make them into a Christmas tree.
Yeah, yeah. If you're not an Arizona resident, you may not be familiar with a tumbleweed Christmas tree. But every year during the holiday season, they amass some of the biggest tumbleweeds they can find, pile them up into a literal fucking Christmas tree, spray paint them white, and cover them in lights and ornaments, and stick it in the center of downtown Chandler.
They're like, it's beautiful.
It's beautiful. It's tradition. The tumbleweed Christmas tree.
You had one in your backyard.
Yeah. I definitely had enough to make the tumbleweed Christmas tree. And that was probably 2 or 3 weeks ago. Had to be longer than that. That was like a month ago.
Yeah.
And we are still dealing with the fallout.
Well, and now you're gonna have those fucking weeds grow in your backyard. Mm-hmm. Because they just pooped their seeds all over.
My yard has been thoroughly seeded. She pregnant.
I was gonna say she impregnated.
Pregnant. So, yeah, I kind of forgot where I was going with that.
I don't know either. I don't know how it even started. Welcome to the Eldritch Estate.
The point is, there was a lot of tumbleweeds.
Fuck a tumbleweed. don't fuck a tumbleweed that would hurt don't so do, bad.
Don't do, my god. Get an infection. Getting back to Kelly, Kentucky and the Sutton family. Oh, we were talking about the ground.
Oh, yeah.
In the farmhouse. So, like, yeah, fuck that if you live in Arizona. First of all, that ground be hot as hell in the summer, even true. Indoors.
True.
Second of all, snakes, scorpions.
I don't need a scorpedo in my foot.
And then the fucking tumbleweeds, bro. I'm not about it. Plus, my dogs would be like, you know what this is great for?
Shitting.
Digging.
Our dogs have different tracks of mind.
Yeah. The new girls that we rescued, Zelda and Zella, love to dig. Love it. And I'm like, fuck. Because we were very stern with the boys that digging was not allowed. But then Koji sees Zelda digging, and he's like, fuck it, I'm gonna dig too.
You let her do it, I'm doing it.
Yep. So, anyway, getting back to the Suttons.
Sorry.
The residents of the house included Glennie Langford.
I love the name Glennie.
Glennie Langford, 50 years old. Her young children, Lonnie, Charlton, and Mary, 12, 10, and 7, respectively. Her two adult sons from a previous marriage, Elmer Lucky Sutton and John Charlie J.C. Sutton. Their respective wives, Vera and Aileen. Aileen's brother, O.P. Baker. And family friends, Billy Ray Taylor, who was 21, and his wife, June, who was 18.
I just need you to say all these names with a twang. Billy Ray Taylor and his wife, June.
June, Vera and Aileen. Lucky. JC.
The Suttons.
The Taylors, Lucky, and Vera were all reportedly itinerant carnival workers that were visiting the farmhouse. So, it's usually just Glennie and her younger kids, and occasionally one of her older sons, but it seemed like they were all there because they had been working at the carnival, and then they had come to stay with Glennie.
They're a big family of carnies. I love this.
They really are.
I don't know if I'm gonna keep loving it, but I love it right now.
I think you're gonna keep loving it.
All right.
At least them.
Okay.
Now, before I go on, let's remember what time it is in America.
The 50s.
The 50s. Yes, if you're a loyal listener of the Eldridge Estate, you already know that this was UFO mania in the U.S. All throughout the 50s, people were abuzz with talk of aliens, UFO sightings, and close encounters of the third kind.
Butthole probing, it was awry. It was everywhere.
Tim was having the time of his life. people were also pretty panicky and paranoid in general due to, like, Cold War talk and the Red Scare that was sweeping the country. Tensions were high, and people were liable to go public with all kinds of information. They saw a light in the night sky, their neighbor's a commie, the dog's walking on its hind legs. Anything could happen.
The fucking cats.
It's the fucking cats, bro.
There's only two left, guys. Two.
Can we also just tell you that, like, right before we started recording, there was some sort of loud bang, like, either fireworks... Like
three or four of them.
Or, like, gunshots?
We're in a little bit of a redneck part of town, though, so... It could have been both.
Yeah, it's not quite The Hills Have Eyes, but it's close.
You go a little further east.
And then someone was, like, screaming at the top of their lungs shortly after the loud bangs.
I really tried to decipher what was happening, too. Like, every time I'd put my headphones on, then there would be more screaming, and I'd take them off, and I'd hear, like, well, you know what? The fuck? I am mad. And I'm like, well, shit, I missed the why.
So... On the night of August 21st, 1955, Billy Ray Taylor, visiting his friends, the Suttons, was walking to the nearby well to get some water. Because remember, there's no running water in this farmhouse.
Dude, well water makes your hair so yellow when you're blonde.
Oh.
It's a thing.
Sorry. Yeah, that was unexpected, but interesting.
I mean, I don't think it's going to make... He's getting a drink. I don't think it's going to make his hair yellow, but
getting a drink.
I am concerned for these blondes in this family. These
blondes. I am actually not aware of if there were any blondes in the collection here. According to Taylor, he saw a bright rainbow light flash across the sky just above the trees and then splash down towards a field behind the Sutton home. He said the unidentified object was accompanied by a hissing sound. Terrified, he ran back to the house and told the group what he'd seen. They laughed him off, despite his frantic portrayal.
They're over here like, Billy's been drinking.
Yeah, and we're gonna talk about that a little bit, too. Then they came. This was really stupid meme today in my music teacher Facebook group. It was like a rare photo of the piano that was used to record the Jaws soundtrack, and it was this baby grand piano that only had two keys on it, so it was like really skinny. And that's funny, damn it.
I mean, I think it's funny. I'm not even a music teacher.
A silvery green glow shone through the windows of the cabin. Strange figures were visible through the mist with humanoid bodies. They were, quote, about 3.5 feet tall and had an oversized head, almost perfectly round. Its arms extended almost to the ground. Its hands had talons, and its oversized eyes glowed with a yellowish light.
Hang on a minute. 3.5 feet tall.
Little green men.
That's like a 2.5-year-old.
Yeah.
Like, just a smidge.
3.5? I don't know. That's maybe a little taller than that. But that is little.
That's still...
Katie is gesturing as to the height.
It's no taller than the table that our mic is on.
I think it's maybe a little taller than that.
But it's a meter stick.
A meter stick, right. A meter stick's taller than that.
Nuh-uh.
Yeah.
No.
No, I have meter sticks in my classroom. It's definitely taller than this table.
Oh. This is why Dusty's the co-signer on my diploma.
We about to get a fucking measuring tape out here and be like, the aliens were about this tall. There's a measuring tape right there.
Oh my god. Get it. I need to know how scared they were of this fucking toddler.
Because here at the Eldritch Estate, we are committed to the facts.
For science.
For science.
I love that there's just conveniently a measuring tape.
Okay, 36. That's 3 feet.
Oh shit, it's taller than the table, she right.
And they said 3.5, so really more like, chia.
Okay, it's the size of my 5-year-old.
Exactly.
Oops. Ooh. Don't let that zip through your hand. You're about to cut your arm off for science.
Okay.
I hope you can hear that in the recording.
Mission accomplished. Research complete.
So they were terrified of a 5-year-old, guys.
It was terrifying. It had a huge, almost round, almost perfectly round head.
I mean, my children.
And talons. Children.
My son's head is in the 98th percentile. It's going to be my kid.
Oh. Yeah, in case you guys didn't know, Katie's 10 weeks out, so like,
yep.
It's coming.
We 30 weeks, y'all.
Soon.
Baby Eldritch is coming. Dun, dun, dun!
We should make a, like, horror film, B-horror film flick that's just like a trailer of, like, baby Eldritch and, like, a big silhouette of, like, a baby head coming.
We can paint my stomach like a giant brain.
Alright. The body gave off an eerie shimmer in the light of the night's new moon, they said, as if it was made of a silver metal. Estimates?
Twinkled.
Twinkled. Twinkle baby.
It was a vampire.
Sparkly. Estimates of the size of the alleged creature varied from 2 feet to 4 feet, because, you know, there's like almost 12 people reporting this at the police station.
And some of them have the measurement skills of me.
Yeah, and some of them, like, their range in age from 7 years old to 50 years old.
Word.
Like, there's gonna be a variety of accounts here.
Well, my accuracy on measurements is, like, literally just what you do in haircuts. So, this, like, between 1 and 7 inches, the size of a cutting comb.
With age, people are like, well, about how old were they? I'm like, I don't know, they were probably somewhere between, like, 3 and 90.
Yeah. I don't know, especially since these little kids are, like, contouring their face and shit. Yeah. I'm like, fuck, I have no clue.
Oh my god.
Be like, how old do you think I am? I'm like, bitch, I don't play that game.
I'm pretty good at guessing kids because I teach kids. I'll be like, that kid's about 5th grade. Like,
yeah.
I got that. But yeah, if they're, like, high school or older, I'm like, I don't know. You're not dead yet, so.
You're still alive.
Definitely not in the ground decaying. I can tell that for sure. Yeah. 100%.
You have a heartbeat.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Still warm. Got that blood flowing. That's about all I'm good for. They also gave details such as, quote, large pointed ears, claw-like hands, eyes that glowed yellow, and spindly legs. These details later appeared in various media.
It reminds me of the the little guys in the vending machine from Toy Story.
I totally reference that later.
Oh, I love that. Except because, they did not have spindly legs. They have, like, little short squeaky legs.
Yes, they're stumpy. Because this is the little green men. Like, this is the quintessential definition of an alien that was popular at the time.
Yeah.
Okay, getting back to the Suttons.
Dude, have you heard the crisis cow over
Bro.
Here?
Bro! No. We're moving on.
I pray that you hear the crisis cow someday.
The dogs outside began to bark incessantly. The Suttons weren't laughing anymore. Everyone reached for their firearms. The two men grabbed a 20-gauge shotgun and a 22 rifle and fired at the little man. Its hands now-
What if it was a kid?
Dude, don't even fucking say that.
Okay, but it's the size of a 5-year-old.
We're just gonna pretend that they did not fire upon children, okay? Anyway.
Okay.
Its hands now raised as if held up at gunpoint as it came toward the back door. They reported that it then did a flip, scrambled upright, and fled into the darkness.
Tell me why I'm seeing this as some, like, what the fuck is that movie? With the little guys. Charlie and Chocolate Factory.
Oh, the Oompa Loompas.
Like, where they do the dances and stuff, but then, like, they do a flip and run away.
Doompa-dee-doo, I've got another riddle for you. Yeah.
Except they ain't fucked up in that movie where they shooting at him.
Yeah. Can we just talk about, like, Gene Wilder in that movie, though? Ooh. God damn.
Phenomenal.
Amazing. I love Gene Wilder.
Same.
The scene where they're in the, like, tunnel, and he gets all fucking... direct eye contact with the camera, and it's real intense.
And none of the actors actually knew about that scene, like, it was not super scripted.
Right. So they're, like, they literally were experiencing this, and they're like, what the fuck? And Gene Wilder's like, and we're slowly going.
And they're like, this motherfucker's actually insane.
He's gonna fucking kill us. And that's why I love Gene Wilder.
Word.
A short while later, they saw another creature at the side window peeking through the screen. They fired at it again, though the creature appeared to be impervious to their bullets.
They don't ask any questions before they shoot in this family.
No. But when you think about it, you can't really blame them. Like, they're in this very secluded area, way far out in the middle of nowhere. There's nothing around.
You probably don't have a neighbor for miles.
No neighbors for miles. There's no TV. No radio, no books in this house, so your connection with the outside world is also non-existent.
That ain't Johnny, I'm shooting him.
Exactly. Like, they could have put out a radio bulletin like, hey, we're gonna have Boy Scouts coming around to, like, make sure all your locks work at your house or whatever
the
fuck.
We're gonna sell you some popcorn or whatever.
Yeah,
the fuck.
And these people would have had no idea because they're so cut off from the rest of society, honestly.
You could have mowed down a whole Girl Scout troop but not even realized it.
On God. Once more, they reported that the creature flipped and then disappeared right after they had fired at it.
It's like one of those clowns that you can't tip over, like, you punch it.
I know,
and it
it's like
back
a
up.
Little bit comical, like, whoop, 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 like, they fire at it a bunch of times and then just like, does a flip and disappears, like, rude.
I picture it, like, doing a flip, giving him the finger and running
yeah,
away.
Exactly, I was just thinking that. in an article titled, Close Encounter at Kelly and Others of 1955, Mrs. Lankford told interviewer Isabel Davis, I went out into the hallway and crouched down next to Billy when I saw one approaching the door. It looked like a 5-gallon gasoline can with a head on top and small legs. It was a shimmering bright metal, like, on my refrigerator. And then I go on to talk about, like, the fact that these people were living in the middle of nowhere, and it was the 50s, and, like, alien and UFO mania had gripped the nation, as well as the widespread paranoia of the Cold War and Russian counterintelligence and communism and all this stuff. And then the fact that they had, like, basically no technology in the home. So these beings were very confusing and startling to them, and their reaction was quite literally to shoot first, ask questions later. Alright, back to the action. This is an excerpt from an article on history.com, like the History Channel, that I have referenced in the notes, so you can go and find that article in our notes if you want to read it. Quote, the drama escalated when Taylor stepped outside the small overhanging roof, and those behind him saw a claw-like hand reach down and touch his hair. The group screamed and pulled Taylor back while Lucky shot above the overhang and then at another similar creature in a nearby tree. It floated to the ground and then scurried into the woods.
Gives me Flatwoods Monster vibes.
Yes.
Like the little claw hand. Mm-hmm. Hug a cryptid.
Hug a cryptid. The family proceeded to spend the next several hours hiding out in the farmhouse, listening for sounds of the creatures. They had gone through most of their ammunition. One report estimated 4 boxes of shotgun shells.
When in doubt, shoot blindly.
Like, how the fuck you go through all your ammo in a few hours?
And of all the places to hide, I'm not hiding in the fucking barn. That's the most horror movie shit you can make up.
And they sat huddled together, frightened and waiting for the next wave, because, like, they kept coming in their perspective, basically. They remained this way until approximately 11 p.m. when they ran to the Hopkinsville police station to tell their tale. Quote, "These aren't the kind of people who normally run to the police for help," Police Chief Russell Greenwell later told investigators. "What they do is reach for their guns."
They already did that.
Oh, yeah. Yet here they were, women and children hysterical, and one man with a pulse of 140 beats per minute measured by an investigator.
I mean, me too.
Yeah, but he didn't have no Fitbit.
That's true.
I do like, though, that, like, in the middle of all this, they were like, let me take your pulse real quick.
The cop's like, hang on, hold, damn. Shut up. Oh, wow, your heart's going very fast.
Your heart is 140 beats per minute, sir. The local police chief would have laughed them off, but because of how genuinely frightened they seemed, he called for backup and the squad went to investigate. After ensuring that the creatures were no longer on site, they conducted a search of the property. They found no evidence of the creatures that the Suttons had been talking about. There was no indication that anything had happened here at all. In fact, save for the numerous shell casings and bullet holes piercing the window screens, doors, and roofing of the small farmhouse.
Shit, they even shot the roof?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Like, they were
just in
panicked.
Case you up there. Pow, pow, motherfucker.
It kind of reminds me of that scene in Men in Black where Tommy Lee Jones is talking to Will Smith's character, and he's like, a person is smart. People are dumb, panicky animals, and you know it. Because it's true, like, when you get a bunch of people together and they all get freaked out about something, like, they start acting dumb.
When emotions are high, intelligence is low.
Word. So their next inclination was to check for proof of possible intoxication. Like, did these drunk hillbillies make the whole thing up? Or did they see some shit that wasn't there and shot off all their ammo at some raccoons or something?
We're gonna have to sobriety test these carnies.
Like, where are y'all keeping the moonshine, basically? But they found no liquor in the building whatsoever. According to the matriarch, Mrs. Glennie Lankford, drinking was not allowed on the premises.
She runs a tight ship.
I think she fucking does, dude. So finding nothing to go on and having no way of comforting the Suttons, the police concluded their investigation and left. Once they were gone, the Suttons claimed that the creatures came back. Mrs. Lankford claimed that between 2:30 a.m. and sunrise that day, one of the creatures hovered outside her window, glowing repeatedly with its claw-like hand on the window screen.
What if it's just trying to tell her, like, hey man, you got a flat tire or something?
Well, but, like, how fucking freaky would that be? Like, you're just, like, in your house after having this encounter, and there's one just outside your window, like, we'd like to speak with you about your car's extended warranty. Like, fucking go away, that's so creepy.
It's real weird. Like, I'm unsettled by even seeing a fucking drone in my backyard.
Oh.
That happens regularly. I think the police station uses them to, like, fly over the area.
It's so weird.
It's a weird theory of mine. I think that they use them for surveillance, but that's just my tinfoil hat.
Yeah. Allegedly.
Allegedly.
I assume the only reason they did not fire on it is because they were out of ammo at this point.
They're over here like, throw the gun!
Hit it with a stick, Cletus!
Who's the smallest? We're sacrificing you.
I got a big old rock over here.
Sometimes there just ain't enough rocks.
I'll be climbing all over you like a spider monkey.
I love that. You went from Forrest Gump to Talladega Nights.
I'm quick with it.
I'm liking it. I'm loving it.
In the following days, after radio stations and newspapers, including the New York Times, reported the incident, hundreds of people descended on the farm, just, like, out of curiosity, often ridiculing the Suttons as ignorant or fraudulent. They put up no trespassing signs, but these proved useless. It didn't discourage people from coming. So then they tried charging admission. 50 cents to come onto their land, $1 for information, and $10 for taking pictures. I love the $1 for information. Like, you can ask me questions, but it's gonna be a dollar.
I'm gonna start using that on a daily basis. Like, for work, my child.
Random people in my DMs.
At 11 o'clock at night. You're gonna have to Venmo me for $10 for answers on that.
Yeah, if you want me to continue this conversation, you're gonna have to Venmo me 10 bucks. So after they started charging, then these people started blasting them as, like, fortune-seeking, you know, manipulators. Like, oh, you just want your own piece of the pie, your 15 minutes of fame. You're just trying to make a buck off of this.
Or you wouldn't fucking go away, so you might as well charge them.
Right. And, like, how many tourist traps in the United States are all based on some shit went down here once, and, like, you can come and take pictures and buy stupid-ass little souvenirs?
There's a whole gift shop for the Flatwoods Monster, I'm just saying, like...
There was a fucking festival for it!
I love it.
So, as the Kelly story spread into the world, it took on a life of its own. The number of little men grew to a dozen or more. Like, they said, what, like three or four? And now it's like, oh, there were a dozen. A few years later, the little metallic men were conflated with an Eastern Kentucky woman's report of a flying saucer and a 6-foot-tall man in green, helping launch the myth of little green men.
Okay, see, a 6-foot-tall green man? Scarier.
Well, and we're gonna do a whole fucking episode on the different alien races. Like, I'm not there yet, and if you listen to the last podcast on the left, you know why I'm not there yet, because they did, like, something so in-depth with it, and they always do, and they're incredible. But, like, there's so many fucking alien races out there. And there's, like, the Greys, and then there's the Tall Greys. And those are two completely different races.
I don't know why it's scarier when they're not a color, like, when they're just gray.
It is. Also, the open window behind you is, like, fucking freaking me out because we're talking about aliens looking in through windows and I'm like, I swear to God, if I see a face in that window.
If it makes you feel any better, there's sage growing right under that window.
Okay. I have here a photocopied letter written by Glennie Langford giving her account of the night. My name is redacted, age 50, and I live at redacted, Hopkinsville, Route 6, Kentucky. On Sunday night, August 21st, 55, about 10:30 p.m., I was walking through the hallway, which is located in the middle of my house, and I looked out the back door to the south and saw a bright silver object about 2.5 feet tall appearing round. I became excited and did not look at it long enough to see if it had any eyes or move. I was about 15 to 20 feet from it. I fell backwards and then was carried into the bedroom. So I assume she, like, fainted or something. My sons, redacted, age 25, and his wife, redacted, age 29, redacted, age 21, and his wife, redacted, age 27, and their friends, redacted, age 21, and his wife, redacted, 18, were all in the house and saw this little man that looked like a monkey.
That's a lot of people.
Like I said, there's a fuck ton of people in this house. About 3:30 a.m., I was in my bedroom and looked out the north window and saw a small silver shining object about 2.5 feet tall that had its hands on the screen looking in. I called for my sons and they shot at it and it left. I was about 60 feet from it this time. I did not see it anymore. I have read the above statement and it is true to the best of my knowledge and belief. Witness, signed, John E. Albert, certified true copy. Because I assume this was dictated.
Word.
I don't think that she typed it herself. And then it's signed Charles N. Kirk, First Lieutenant, U.S. Air Force, Adjutant. Now, the day after the incident, police investigators returned to the farmhouse searching for evidence of a saucer landing, footprints, blood trails, or scratch marks on the roof. Because they'd fired on these things so much, they're thinking, like, there's gotta be blood from them hitting. They had to have hit one.
I mean, do aliens blood?
And what color is their blood if they do? And the other thing was that the report said that they were impervious to the bullets. So, like, would there be blood?
Well, and, like, did it just hit them and then hit the ground, or did it, like, reflect back?
Did it go through them? Are there trees with, like, bullet holes in them nearby? Are there trees nearby?
Probably.
We want answers.
We should go here.
We could go for the festival. There's a festival for this, too.
Yes.
We're just gonna do a tour of, like, all the alien festivals. They found nothing.
I'm sorry, I know we had to shift back into telling the story, but... Okay, it's fine, I'm okay.
I really be switching gears at, like, whiplash speeds.
Sometimes I'm a child and I can't keep up.
Bud Ledwith, a local radio station employee, interviewed the adult eyewitnesses and made drawings based on those accounts. We will be uploading those drawings because they're kind of fucking cute. According to Davis, he was impressed by their remarkable specificity and consistency, even though the men were away from the farmhouse all day, unable to coordinate with the others. So basically, he took drawings based on eyewitness statements from all these different adults, and they all said basically the same thing, even though they hadn't had time to, like, get together and corroborate their story and, like, say, oh, well, he had ears like this and eyes like this, blah, blah, blah. Their descriptions were consistent. Who are you messaging?
Is this it?
Yes.
It's so cute!
There's more. Keep scrolling. While the incident eventually attracted the attention of the Air Force UFO Investigation Program, Project Blue Book, documents suggest that its team never officially pursued the matter, beyond checking in with their Fort Campbell counterparts who had briefly been at the scene the first night. So, Dr. J. Allen Hynek probably did not visit the farmhouse.
I gotta ask. Now I'm looking at this really fucking cute drawing.
Right?
And then I scroll down a little bit and Google shows me great horned owls. Is this gonna be another case of it was a fucking bird?
Yup.
Damn.
Well, at least that's what some people say.
Okay.
We'll get there. One of the most thorough investigations of the Kelly incident was undertaken in 1956 by ufologist Isabel Davis. You'll remember her as the interviewer from the article I mentioned earlier. It was published several decades later by the Center for UFO Studies, a group founded by astronomer Dr. J. Allen Hynek, Project Blue Book's civilian investigator.
Wait, Hynek, that sounds real familiar.
Yeah, we've talked about Dr. Hynek several times.
Okay, I was like, I know that name.
He headed up the Project Blue Book special division of the Air Force, and he was an astronomer and scientist by trade, and so he was sort of the not man in black of the organization.
Okay.
So they would send him out to either justify or debunk these alien sightings, and he would always debunk them, partially because he said he was a man of science and he was a natural skeptic. Like, he's like, there has to be a logical explanation for this. But the general...
He's over here every time, like, it was just birds.
Literally. And he was believable to the layman because he could explain it in a way that made sense to them. He wasn't just some government schmuck in a suit. Mm-hmm. And they were like, this is a real guy. Like, you know, Dr. Hynek wouldn't lie to us. He's a real scientist. He's not one of those government, you know, suit and ties. So he was sort of like their in man for that. And he worked with the U.S. Air Force, and headed up Project Blue Book for several years. And what was interesting about Dr. Hynek was that he gradually became more and more of a believer in, you know, life outside of Earth and you know, life in space and things like that.
Well, I figure if you're in that role for that long, eventually you're going to see some shit that you're like... I've got questions.
Exactly.
Now.
He said he got to a point where he couldn't explain certain things, or so many things were happening. And then, actually, they started to not allow him access to things after a while. They were like, nah, you're not in charge of this one, or you can't access these files. And he was like, but why?
That's my job, bitch.
Yeah. And I think it's because they sort of lost trust in him, because they felt like he was believing too much in what he was investigating.
They're like, wait a minute,
he was trying to get to the truth of the matter.
You're not selling our plotline no more. We out.
So, in this report by Isabel Davis, it was nearly 200 pages, co-written with Ted Blocher, included detailed maps, drawings, documentary records, summaries of similar accounts around the world, and interviews with several Sutton family members and police investigators. She basically addressed their concern about the lack of physical evidence. So they were like, there's no fucking evidence to prove that this actually happened. There's mm-hmm. just a shot up farmhouse and a bunch of people saying that this happened. Mm-hmm. So by her reckoning, none of the possible explanations made sense. She didn't think it was a deliberate hoax or a publicity play or a group hallucination. They had also addressed the point of, like, whether the young men were exaggerating and were possibly intoxicated. She said that her strong impression after meeting Mrs. Langford was that she was a somber, no-nonsense matriarch who abhorred the limelight and had no reason to lie. She was basically like, Mrs. Langford would not do this. She actually hates all this attention that they're getting, and, like, she would not have let them do some silly shit.
She ran a tight fucking ship.
Yeah.
That she wouldn't fly in her house.
Yeah. None of the witnesses, Davis noted, had any history of making, quote, preposterous allegations. In 2006, 50 years later, Joe Nickel, a senior research fellow of the International Committee for Skeptical Inquiry. The Committee for Skeptical Inquiry again, folks.
I love that that's a real thing.
Dude, I want, like, some sort of name tag.
I was like, you need a button.
I'm part of the Skeptical Inquiry Committee or something. And a self-styled paranormal investigator. Which I love that, too. Self-styled paranormal investigator. Some asshole who goes to haunted buildings and shouts at ghosts. I'm sure he's a very nice man. I'm just joking.
Word.
He reviewed the accumulated evidence in an article entitled, quote, Siege of the Little Green Men, the 1955 Kelly, Kentucky incident. In it, he raised suspicion about what he called Billy Taylor's, quote, embroidered testimony.
He had that shit sewn into his shirt.
He matched Taylor's UFO sighting with similar reports from that day, which suggested a small meteor in the vicinity. As for the little men, Nickel floated an explanation used for other alien encounter stories. Owls.
Woo-hoo.
So he was like, oh yeah, those flashing rainbow lights that you saw in the sky? A meteor. Oh, the little green men that you saw? Owls. In particular, the great horned owl, aka the hoot owl, has long wings that could be mistaken for arms, along with talons, yellow eyes, long ears, and a round head that might also match the little men description. As for their metallic shine, Nickel suggests, they could have easily been reflecting moonlight. Okay, then how the fuck they do a flip and scurry into the woods?
Why they flip every time? How did they not die being shot with a shotgun with four boxes of fucking shotgun shells?
And the one lady, she described it as being like a gasoline can with arms and legs. Like, that's not what owls look like. I'm sorry. I'm like, I know shit looks different in the dark, and your, like, mind can play tricks on you when you're scared, too, but, like, an owl is an owl.
Well, and they're like, it has long, spindly legs, though. Bro, have you seen owl legs?
I have seen owl legs. Did you also know that owls can sit crisscross applesauce?
It's so cute, and I hate birds, but it's so cute.
Remind me, I have to show you this video of an owl coming out of anesthesia later.
Okay.
It's really funny.
Okay. I will try.
Now, while hoot owls are known to be active at dusk and extremely aggressive when defending their nest, some investigators question characterizations of the creatures as hostile. To some, their behavior that night in Kelly might be simply curious. He's just at your window, like, hey,
what's in there?
And, like, holding up one of its claw-like hands. So are you talking about its wing, or are you talking about its foot? Was it holding its foot up to the window? Like, I don't know. I don't think it was owls. That's what this comes down to.
It ain't a bird. At the Eldridge Estate, it's never a bird.
Hashtag, it's never a bird.
We don't like birds here. I mean, Dusty might. I'm fucking scared of birds.
I like birds. I could never own a bird, though. Like, I could never have a bird in my house.
I mean, per our conversation earlier, maybe you won't have any more pets anymore.
Yeah. So the town of Kelly still celebrates the encounter, much like the Flatwoods Monster in West Virginia. Geraldine Sutton Stith, the daughter of Elmer Sutton.
I love the name Geraldine.
Geraldine. She didn't learn about her family's legendary encounter with the Little Men until about 20 years later, when a pair of people who were researching the incident tracked down her father and started asking questions. He then decided it was time to share the tale with the next generation.
Let me tell you about some shit I didn't tell you about, honey bun. Sit down.
Right? And can you imagine being like, whoa, dad, you were part of a fucking alien encounter in the 50s? Like, spill the tea.
How do you not tell your kids that?
Right? I imagine, like, when they're younger, not telling them because you don't want to scare them, but, like,
yeah.
If I'm an adult, fucking...
spill.
I'm thirsty. Give me that tea.
Spill.
Stith told the Louisville Courier-Journal that the last three living people who were there that night in 1955 won't speak of it, but she's made it her life's mission to set the record straight. She reached out to Smithy and the other organizers of the festival years ago when she heard that they were hoping to turn her family's history into a town attraction. She wanted to make sure they got the story right, so she volunteered to speak each year at the festival. She completely believes, said one of the organizers. The festival is held at Kelly Station Park, a plot of land purchased and built upon with funds raised by the annual attraction. It's named after the railroad conductor who founded the town, and it's marked by the sign of a railroad car barreling down the tracks. If you look closely, you'll see that the conductor of the train is a little green alien.
Aww.
Adorable. At the center of the park, a 38-foot, 2.5-ton flying saucer hovers, and it lights up and emits smoke. There is also a platform that leads up to the cockpit. No parking is written on a nearby sign. Flying saucer parking only. Violators will be beamed out. The festival also features a Little Green Men homemade costume contest, and visitors can even watch a dramatic recreation of the 1955 shootout at the local cinema. The film is entitled The Invasion of Kelly.
I love that they're like, it's a shootout.
Yeah. Because it was.
Four boxes of shotgun shells.
Four boxes of shotgun shells. That's a lot of fucking shotgun ammo.
They're like, there's no proof this happened, but there is a fucking armory of shotgun shells just laying around on the ground.
I wonder if you can go to the farmhouse.
That'd be dope.
So the other thing is that this is the Little Green Men phenomenon as it sort of takes over in pop culture. Like, how many times do we see aliens portrayed as these small creatures with big heads? How often have you heard Little Green Men in a movie or a TV show?
Sure.
The aliens from Pizza Planet in Toy Story.
Yep.
So, it's interesting that the Suttons actually never used the word green. This was added by newspaper and media outlets reporting on this case.
Oh, shit.
But, it's like, this is the, like, onogenesis of, like, all aliens that we, as we see them or as we envision them. Like, when you think alien, you imagine green. A certain thing in your head. Yeah, green, big head, little body, long arms and legs.
Or gray.
Yeah, or gray. Now, as with any alien case, as I mentioned, we have people in support of it and people trying to debunk it. I just have a couple quotes here from the Wikipedia page. French ufologist Renaud Leclerc also argued, I don't know if that's how you say it, I just went French with it. You just gotta be confident, like I said.
Yeah.
Also argued in a publication that the best explanation of the case is great horned owls. Ufologist Jerome Clark writes that the supposed creatures, quote, floated through the trees and the sound of bullets striking them, quote, resembled bullets striking a metal bucket. Which,
ding,
like,
ding, ding, ding,
I don't know where the fuck he got that. Who said that?
No one.
Were you there, Jerome? Like, do you know him? Does he call you at home? Going with Ace Ventura reference, because I'm just hitting every movie today.
It just gave me the vibe of that TikTok of, like, you didn't raise him like that? Well, then who did? Patricia?
Exactly. Oh, my God. Clark described an odd, luminous patch along a fence where one of the beings had been shot, and, in the woods beyond, a green light whose source could not be determined. However, this description was consistent with foxfire, a bioluminescent fungus on decaying wood.
A bioluminescent algae used as a diversion.
Yeah, exactly. what's that guy's name? David Attenborough that does the, like, narrations for those, like, nature films. Bioluminescent.
That was definitely a Moana quote.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, the big crab guy. She was like, oh. I'm going to throw the Heart of Tahiti at you, but it's painted with, like, it's, like, just a rock. Yeah. Painted with the bioluminescent algae.
Yeah. The
one, like, that sings. As a diversion.
Shiny.
Yep.
Did
you like the song?
He's half of, the Flying Conchords.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's who he is.
Shut up. That's so cool.
Clark also wrote that investigations by police, Air Force officers from nearby Fort Campbell, and civilian ufologists found no evidence of a hoax.
I want to put that on my fucking business cards.
Civilian ufologists. Hell yeah.
Hairstylist.
Dude, what if we just sold, like, name tags? Like, we could just sell, like pins with, like, those on it, like, civilian ufologist.
Yes.
Committee for Skeptical Inquiry. Fucking snatch inspector.
Da-na-na-na-na. Inspector, snatch it.
So they found no evidence of a hoax. However, Brian Dunning reported, the claim that Air Force investigators showed up the next day at Mrs. Langford's house has been published a number of times by later authors, but I found no corroborating evidence of this. So he's basically saying the Air Force people were not there the very next day to investigate.
Well, that's rude.
He also observed the four military police who accompanied the police officers on the night of the event were from an Air Army base, not an Air Force base.
Oh.
Which, like, apples and oranges, I don't know.
Yeah.
Some ufologists compared the alleged creatures to gremlins, which have since often been referred to as the Hopkinsville Goblins in popular culture.
That's really cute.
Ufologist Alan Hendry wrote, this case is distinguished by its duration and also by the number of witnesses involved. Project Blue Book listed the case as a hoax with no further comment. Yeah, I just have a couple more things here. Psychologists Rodney Schmaltz and Scott Lilienfeld, cite the alleged incident as an example of pseudoscience and an extraordinary claim to help students develop critical thinking skills. So they literally use this as an example in their college courses to get people to talk about extraordinary claims, have their students develop critical thinking skills, and examine the pseudoscience behind it.
They're over here like, can you bust this myth?
Yeah.
I like it.
And I think it's interesting because, like, there's clearly some people who think it was a fucking owl.
Yeah.
And there's clearly some people that are like, it's definitely not an owl. So it's an interesting activity, I guess. Like, you could have your students debate it, too. And here's a quote from that Joe Nickell article in 2006. Quote, it is plausible, if not likely, that the aliens were great horned owls, and there is some evidence that the eyewitnesses may have been intoxicated during the alien attack. End quote.
But again, who the fuck was the eyewitness?
Right.
There's not people for miles.
And all of the eyewitnesses are saying, we saw some shit and we fired at it and we're scared.
We live in the house where there is no alcohol.
Right. And there was 11 people, 8 adults and 3 kids, all saying, like, this is what we saw. You know what I mean? It's crazy.
Yeah.
Nickel also notes that the family could have misidentified eagle owls or great horned owls, which are nocturnal, fly silently, have yellow eyes, and aggressively defend their nests. He also goes on to mention the meteor sighting that occurred at the time, claiming that the bright light streak that went across the sky and disappeared beyond the tree line some distance from the house was just a meteor. And that the height of the owls would be comparable to at least the lower end of the reported range. So, like, around 2 feet. Because remember, reports varied from 2 feet to 4 feet. And then he says, quote, there are simply too many similarities between the creatures reported by the families and an aggressive pair of the local great horned owls, which do stand about 2/3 of a meter tall. And there you have it, folks. The Kelly Hopkinsville encounter, largely referred to as the Little Green Men of Kelly, Kentucky.
Was it a bird? Was it a man? Was it a fucking Boy Scout that they shot with a shotgun?
Was it a gasoline can with arms and legs?
Yes, that's the one I'm going with.
Yeah. I mean, you know, as always, we just present the information we find on the internet.
You fought so hard to not say the facts.
The facts. We present the facts, allegedly.
Allegedly.
And let you guys draw your own conclusions. But definitely a fun one, and I like this because, like I said, it's one of, like, the quintessential alien encounter stories. You know? Little Green Men.
Toy Story-esque.
Yeah.
Tell us. Ever had an alien encounter?
Yeah, send us a listener tale. Absolutely. Send us merch ideas, too. We're really close to finally putting out some merch for you guys.
Word.
And we've got some fun stuff coming up for the rest of this season, too. Like I said, we had the true crime stuff last two episodes, a little bit on the heavier side, and then we got some fun stuff coming up. And then we're gonna do our first, like, big-name serial killer as our season finale for season 3.
Get ready.
I mean, H.H. Holmes was pretty huge.
Yeah.
But I still feel like not many people know that name.
Until you say Murder Castle.
Yeah. When we do this next one, everybody knows this next one.
You sure do. We're gonna talk about it.
But not yet. You gotta wait.
You gotta wait.
You gotta wait. Alright. We love you. Thank you, as always, for listening. We'll catch you in the next episode. Remember, you can check out anytime you like.
But you can never leave.
Bye.
Toodaloo.